change the
Okay. There's some handouts back there.
We do have four people on Zoom now. Do you want me to sign them in and write that there's on Zoom? On the sign-in sheet?
If you'd like. Okay. Yeah, we have some folks coming. Maybe I'll let them sign in.
Okay.
We have enough chairs. We'll bring some more chairs in. What I had just talked about a moment ago. So we are recording the audio of this meeting. We're recording right now. There were the handouts back there. There's an agenda that has important information on it. Item 5 of the agenda has a physical mailing address, but also my email address if you'd like to submit written comments up through April 7th. But we also have the opportunity to provide oral testimony here tonight. Okay, well again, thank you everybody. My name is Brian Reagan. It is 1:04, March 25th, 2025. We're at the Arbon Elementary School to discuss public hearings in Eastern Snake Plain aquifer tributary basins. On March 7th, 2025, the department mailed notice to all groundwater right holders in this tributary basin of this hearing. And we also posted notice on the Town Hall Idaho website. Now, the purpose of the hearing is to present information and give the public an opportunity to provide oral or written comments on the proposed action to include tributary basins into the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer Area of Common Groundwater Supply, as per the requirements of Idaho Code 42233C. Actually, yeah, I forgot to ask you, Matt. Dim the lights a little bit.
There you go.
That's good. Okay. Sorry about that. And our screens was a little bit crooked earlier, so hopefully it doesn't bother you too much. As I mentioned, the agenda has a mailing address, but also the notice that was sent out had the mailing address where you can submit written comments. The meeting agenda, we'll go through some greetings and introductions. There will be two informational presentations. We'll have time for a question and answer session. Then we'll take public testimony and then we'll adjourn. So there are some other departmental staff in the room here today. If I could ask them to introduce themselves.
Hello, my name is Steve Kozowski. I'm the Water Distribution Section Manager at the Boise office.
Blake Jordan, Water Resource Program Manager in Idaho Falls office.
John Davidson, I'm a Water Resource Agent in the Idaho Falls office.
Christian Stewart, Water Resource Agent, also in the Idaho Falls office.
Megan Carter, I'm a Deputy Attorney General and I represent the Department of Water Resources and I'm out of Boise.
Good afternoon, I'm Brian Patton, Deputy Director, Department of Water Resources.
I'm Matt Anders, I'm a hydrologist with IDWR, I'm on the Boise office.
Matt Weaver. I'm the director of the Department of Water Resources out of Boise, and I just want to thank everyone for coming. We held a meeting yesterday on this subject in the Big Lost Basin. We had about 80 folks show up, and that evening or last night, we were in Howe in the Little Lost, and we had somewhere between 30 and 40 folks show up. So after this presentation, we'll be over in the Portnett Basin and then in the Raft tomorrow. And there are a lot of staff here, but that's because we think this is very important. We recognize the disruption that this process can potentially cause groundwater users in the upper basins. We want to make sure we have people here that can answer your questions and they can provide testimony so that we have your thoughts to consider as we take the next steps after this meeting. We've got some good presenters here that are going to give you background on the legal, administrative, and technical basis for the actions that we will potentially be taking. So with that, I'll just turn it over to those folks.
Thank you, Matt. Are there any water district staff here today that would like to introduce themselves?
Somebody will cheer. He's here. Richard Curry, Water Master 2901.
Any elected officials or county folks here?
I have Mayor for Dubois, Idaho.
Thank you. Gail, would you guys like to introduce yourselves at all? Or?
No.
Okay, have I missed anybody? Yes, sir.
My name is Bob Turner. I work with Idaho Groundwater Appropriators. We provide services for 10 groundwater districts from Thousand Springs area up to Ashton. Over a million acres of irrigation on those acres. We provide legal services. We deal with water dispute, water policy disputes. We have a technical working group of hydrologists that looks at the orders and the methodology orders. And we provide public relation activities and other services that groundwater users, mitigation plan development, and so forth. So we provide that service to 10 groundwater users.
Of course. I'm Jackson Higgs. I'm a hydrologist. I work with Igloo, but I also work with a lot of the groundwater districts, including the American Falls Aberdeen Groundwater District, of which this valley is covered. Not all the members here, or all the water right owners are members here, but there is currently a groundwater district that covers this area.
Okay, well, thank you, everybody. Now, at this time, we'll get into the informational presentations. If I could ask you to hold your questions until we're done with those. During my presentation, I will be covering the prior appropriation doctrine, water districts, Idaho conjunctive management and delivery calls, surface water coalition delivery call, and the Idaho Code 42233C. The priority of appropriation shall give the better right as between those using the water. Now, this quote comes from the Idaho Constitution, and it identifies Idaho as a prior appropriation doctrine state. So in other words, when it comes to administering water use, first in time is first in right. For example, if your recognized use of water predates your neighbor's, call them neighbor number one, you're considered to be senior, and neighbor number one would be junior to you. Next, if the recognized use of water by neighbor one predates neighbor number two, neighbor one would be senior and neighbor two would be junior, so on and so forth down the line. Now, I've been using the phrase recognized date of use, but the actual term is called the priority date. And another term to mention, a water right, is a catch-all for the authorizations to use waters of the state that were either decreed by a court or issued by the Idaho Department of Water Resources. And when this language was written into the Constitution, it adopted what was already the law before Idaho was admitted as a state in the Union in July of 1890. And because of this language, we must have lists of water rights with clearly described diversion limits and priority dates, water districts and water masters across the state to administer these water rights, tracking spreadsheets and databases, accounting models and groundwater models, surface and groundwater monitoring networks, and technical and legal staff, all to figure out who is first in right and to ensure those who have the senior water right get the water they are legally entitled to. Now, on the topic of water districts, A water district is a governmental entity organized in accordance with the provisions of Chapter 6, Title 42, Idaho Code. And in Idaho, water districts are the statutorily authorized entities responsible for carrying out priority administration. The director creates water districts, overseen by water masters, in order to distribute water rights from surface and groundwater sources in accordance with water right priority dates. Water distribution in water districts is accomplished by water masters who are elected annually by the water users within the district. And these water masters are supervised by the director and report to the director on an annual basis on how they measured and administered the rights in their districts. Many of you are well-versed in this water right administration, but if you'll allow me a few moments, I'd like to present two scenarios just to set the stage. This scenario shows a surface water system, and on the stream there are two points of diversion, A and B, and three water rights shown in green. And each water right has a diversion rate and a priority date. The total diversion rate for all three water rights is 12 cubic feet per second. And the amount of water available in the stream will determine how much water each user gets. So let's look at a few examples. So in example one, the stream flow is 12 CFS. So the 1880 right gets their full allotment. The 1885 right gets their full allotment. And so does the 1905 right. In example two, stream flow is 10 CFS. The 1880 right gets its allotment, 1885. But there's nothing left over for the 1905 right. In example three, stream flow is 7 CFS. Again, the 1880 gets their full. 1885 is cut down to 2 CFS. And again, there's nothing left over for the 1905 right. And then the last example, 5 CFS, only the 1880 right gets water. So when there's not enough water to satisfy all rights, the senior water rights receive their full entitlement before the junior water rights receive any water. Now, this is not a share and share-like system. Now, this scenario is nearly identical to the previous, but note the addition of point of diversion C, which is a groundwater well that began pumping in 1973 to irrigate four full pivots. And here, the pre-1973 water master records show that the stream flow was rarely less than 8 to 10 CFS, and the 1885 right was not cut or cut down to no less than 3 CFS. But the post-1973 water master records show that that 1885 right was cut by August in most years. So the question is, can the owner of the 1885 surface water right call for delivery of water against the owner of the 1973 groundwater right? Now, the answer is yes, and I hope that these following slides, which I'll show groundwater and surface water interaction in the presence of a pumping well, will explain why the answer is yes. This figure in text courtesy of the United States Geological Survey shows the effect of a pumping groundwater well adjacent to a stream. And the lettered explanations correspond to the lettered figures. Now, figure A shows no groundwater well. And figure B, pumping groundwater from a well can cause depletion to the surface water system because the sucking action of the pump influences and pulls water towards the well. This is called the cone of depression. This conical influence can extend outward and intercept surface water sources and other water that would have otherwise ended up in the surface water system. And this is shown in figures B, C, and D. The volume of water in the stream decreases because the well has captured water that would have made it to the stream, and because water in the stream has been flowing out of the bottom and the banks towards the pumping well. Now, the recognition that surface and groundwater sources interact resulted in the need to manage the two sources as one source, or to use the proper term, manage the two sources conjunctively. Now, has Idaho always administered surface and groundwater sources on the Eastern Snake Plain conjunctively? The answer is no. Prior to the mid-1990s, surface and groundwater was administered separately on the Eastern Snake Plain. And this changed in 1994 due to the case Musser versus Higginson. Now in this case, the Mussers owned a surface water right with an 1892 priority date that was delivered by a spring source from the Kern Tunnel in southern Idaho. The source of the spring was groundwater emanating from the aquifer. In 1993, the Musters claimed that not enough water was available to satisfy their full water rate, and they requested full and immediate delivery of water rights. But the director of the Department of Water Resources denied the request, citing no authority to administer both surface and groundwater sources together. Now, after this, the director started the process to create rules that describe how to administer groundwater in the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer and surface water in the Snake River together or conjunctively. And at the same time, the Musters sought assistance from the court, hoping to compel the director to deliver water rights and distribute groundwater based on priority. And the court ruled in favor of the Musters. So in the end, the Musters were supplied water from another source. However, two important consequences of this matter were that the courts concluded that under the prior appropriation doctrine, the director has a clear legal duty to administer surface and groundwater rights together. And we had the conjunctive management rules adopted in 1994 and approved by the legislature in 1995. The conjunctive management rules lay out the process of administering surface and groundwater rights based on priority in an area having a common groundwater supply. Now, these rules establish the procedures to regulate the distribution of water from streams, rivers, lakes, groundwater, and other natural sources as necessary to carry out the laws in accordance with the priorities of the rights of the users. And these rules go over definitions, filing and responding to delivery calls, determining material injury, and mitigation plans. A few definitions. Conjunctive management is the legal and hydrologic integration of administration of the diversion and use of water under water rights from surface and groundwater sources. Conjunctive management describes the concept of administering ground and surface water sources together, including inside areas having a common groundwater supply. A delivery call is a request from the holder of a water right for the administration of water rights under the prior appropriation doctrine. An area having a common groundwater supply. Now, this is the actual definition, but it's not easy for me to read as a whole, so I break it down into its components. So it is a groundwater source and a surface water source that are hydrologically connected. And due to this connection, when groundwater volumes fluctuate, so do surface water volumes. And these fluctuations affect the amount of surface and groundwater available to people using those common waters. Now, two aspects to note. Areas of common groundwater are delineated by boundaries, which can be represented on maps. And areas of common groundwater also define the extent of those areas subject to delivery call actions. Material injury, that's the hindrance to or impact upon the exercise of a water right caused by another water user. And last definition, mitigation plan. This is a document submitted by owners of junior priority groundwater rights. These mitigation plans identify actions and measures to prevent or compensate holders of senior priority water rights for material injury caused by diverting groundwater in areas having a common groundwater supply. And I do want to point out that mitigation plans, when in place, allow junior users to divert out of priority if they're meeting the terms and conditions of that plan. So currently, there's only one defined area having a common groundwater supply in Idaho, and it's located below the Eastern Snake Plain. That's this area there. It's not showing up too well, but on your agenda, there's another map. The area bounded by the orange line on this map was the original Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer area of common groundwater supply boundary as per the 1994 conjunctive management rules. You can see that up through here. The green line on the map, that's the map that's on your agenda, this was modified on July 1st of 2024 as per Title 42, Chapter 233C of Idaho Code, and is shown as the green line on this map and the agenda. We have the tributary basins around the Eastern Snake Plain. And on May 28th, 2024, notice was sent to owners of groundwater rights in those areas to be included between the orange and green boundaries. So that's this area here and here. There's some little snippets along this edge as well. And on June 28th, 2024, the director issued an order stating that groundwater rights in these newly included areas will be phased into delivery call action starting November 1st, 2025. So doing so provided these users 18 months to react to the boundary change. And that deadline is fast approaching. Most Idaho conjunctive administration delivery calls are on the Eastern Snake Plain, and the department has conjunctively administered the Eastern Snake Plain for three decades. Spring user delivery calls are mostly resolved or quiet at this time, but the Surface Water Coalition delivery call is ongoing, and I'd like to spend a slide or two on that. The Surface Water Coalition is a collection of seven surface water delivery entities. We have American Falls Reservoir District 2, Northside Canal Company, Twin Falls Canal Company, and the Minidoka, A and B, Burley, and Milner irrigation districts. And combined, they irrigate about 545,000 acres. Now, all the Surface Water Coalition entities divert water from the Snake River between American Falls Dam and Milner Dam, shown on the map between the red arrows, although their places of use are further west. This delivery call was filed in 2005. And between 2005 and 2008, the parties worked to develop methods for determining the material injury. Between 2008 and 2016, we saw the implementation of the court-approved methodology for determining the in-season injury and the end-of-season injury to storage carryover. Between 2016 and 2024, there were a number of approved mitigation plans for the Idaho groundwater appropriators, cities, and other groups. And as Bob mentioned, IGWA is a coalition of groundwater districts representing mostly irrigators. And then from 2024 to the present, those groundwater users are operating under existing or modified mitigation plans. So for my final slide, it takes us back to the beginning and the purpose for holding this public hearing. Idaho Code 42233C was enacted on July 1st, 2024, and it redefined the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer Area of Common Groundwater Supply. It granted authority to expand the ESPA Area of Common Groundwater Supply into tributary basins that affect the ESPA, and it required public notice, public hearings, and an opportunity for public comment prior to the expansion. And that's the end of my presentation. I'd ask Matt to come up and tell us what he's going to be talking about.
Everyone, my name is Matt Anders. I'm a hydrologist with the Department of Water Resources. I'm going to spend about 10 minutes going over the connection between the hydrologic connection between the tributaries and the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer. So here we are back at the same map that Brian showed. The polygon in the middle is the Eastern Snake Plain. The around it are the tributaries outlined in gray here and then labeled with their name. The orange line was the old area of common groundwater up to July 1st, 2024, and the green line is the new area of common groundwater since July 1st, 2024. The change between those two lines was essentially the area of common groundwater got a little bit larger, and it extended up some of the tributary drainages, such as the Big Lost, Little Lost, a little bit in the American Falls as well. So let's talk about the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer first. So here we are in eastern Idaho again. This green line is the area of common groundwater as of July 1st, 2024. So flow in the aquifer is northeast to southwest, depicted by these thick lines here and here. And the aquifer discharges to the Snake River in two places, here and this kind of orangish line, thick line here. This is the Thousand Springs reach of the Snake River. The other place where the aquifer discharges is this purple, thick purple line here. We refer to that as the near Blackfoot to Minidoka reach of the Snake River. This portion, this reach is critical to the Surface Water Coalition. In the July through September timeframe, almost all of their natural flow is coming from the aquifer, discharging from the aquifer to the river. And since about 1980, we've seen a decline in that discharge. So now let's start talking about the tributary basins. We're back to our original map. So what these tributary basins are, is they're surface water drainages that were delineated by the USGS in the 70s. The groundwater drainage areas in this area generally match the surface water boundaries. There are some places where they don't match. Oftentimes that's what we refer to as drainage or groundwater divides into valley bottoms. For example, the Bancroft Lund area over here in the Portneuf, the Arbin Valley, which is up valley from where we're sitting right now, there's a groundwater divide there as well. Sometimes those can get challenging about where they actually are. So here I've zoomed in on the American Falls tributary drainage. The orange line is here. This is the old area of common groundwater. This green line is the new area of common groundwater. So I'm going to show you some numbers here, and it's going to represent the American Falls tributary drainage above, you know, south of this green line. So this is a cross-section illustrating the relationship between the tributary drainages and the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer. So on the left here, I have a tributary drainage. On the right, I have the Eastern Snake Plain. And this dashed line here is the transition zone between the two. So we see three connections between those, between the tributaries and the Eastern Snake Plain. The first is a surface water connection. Tributary stream is coming down out of the tributary, runs out onto the Eastern Snake Plain, and discharges to the Snake River. Relatively straightforward, we can see it, we can measure it. The other two connections are underground connections, and they are more difficult. You can't see them, they're difficult to measure. So the first one is seepage. So I have seepage labeled right here on my figure. So as the tributary stream comes down out of the tributary and goes out on the Eastern Snake Plain, some of these tributaries start seeping water through their bed, through the bed of the stream, and that water is joining with the Eastern Snake Plain aquifer. The other connection that we see is underflow. I have underflow labeled right here. So we have aquifers in the tributary drainages. They're running downhill, or they're flowing downhill towards Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer. When they get to the Eastern Snake Plain, they merge with the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer. So tributary drainages are contributing water in various amounts. Some of them have a large amount of water. Some of them have a little. Some of them are only intermittent, you know, just a few times of the year. So this pie chart illustrates the total amount of water being added to the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer in any given year. The two pie slices that we're interested in today are this blue slice and this orange slice. The blue is the tributary underflow from all of the tributaries added together, and that's about 950,000 acre feet a year. The orange slice is the seepage from the tributaries added together. That's about 650,000 acre feet a year. When you add those together, that's 20% of the water going into the Eastern Snake Plain Aquifer on any given year is coming out of the tributaries. So when we pump groundwater and use it for a beneficial use, oftentimes there's a consumption of that water, meaning it's gone to the system. It's used, but we can't get it back. It doesn't go back to the aquifer, it doesn't go back to streams. The largest form of consumptive use that we have in the tributaries and on the Eastern Snake Plain is pumping groundwater and putting it on crops for irrigation. The portion of the water that we irrigate with that evaporates off the ground, or it transpires through the through the plants as they're growing, that water is lost to the atmosphere. We don't have access to that anymore. So on the left, this pie chart here, the biggest piece of consumptive use from the Eastern Snake Plain and its tributaries is from the Eastern Snake Plain aquifer itself. About 2.4 million acre feet a year are consumptively used out of the aquifer. In the tributaries outside the area of common groundwater, there's about 287,000 acre feet of consumptive use. In two of the tributaries, the Big Lost and the Little Lost, that are inside the area of common groundwater, it's a little less than 100,000 acre feet of consumptive use. So what I've done is I've taken these slices that represent the tributaries, and I've created a new pie chart on the right, and I've labeled each one of the tributaries and how much consumptive use they have. So today, we're in the American Falls, which is down here. So the average consumptive use in the American Falls tributary is 2,000 acre feet each year. This is one of the handouts that was in the back. If you didn't get one, we can get you one before I go. So now I've taken all of these numbers from this pie chart, and I've put them on this map right here. This gives you a spatial representation of where the consumptive use is happening in the different tributaries. This is also a handout that's available to you. And then this is my last slide. So consumptive use in the tributaries is reducing the water inputs to the Eastern Snake Plain aquifer. It's reducing, you know, the direct connection, the surface flow, underflow, and seepage. More importantly, that consumptive use is reducing the discharge in the near Blackfoot to Minidoka reach, which is the critical reach for the surface water coalition. So the way to interpret this map, let me see American Falls. American Falls is right here, and the number there is 2,000 acre feet. So of the consumptive use happening in the American Falls tributary each year, that consumptive use is causing a reduction in the near Blackfoot to Minidoka reach of 2,000 acre feet per year. With that, I'll hand it back to Brian, and we can move on the agenda.
Thanks, Matt.
Yep.
Let's go ahead and flip the lights on. Okay. That was the informational presentations. I think we're into the question and answer portion of the meeting, so I'll open it up for questions from the audience. Yes?
He just said 2,000 acre feet that is being consumed. Question, there's several of them here. Are you counting in the reservation as part of that?
Prefer.
Because
we have no control over that, so neither do you. Because if you don't take, if
that?
They're inside of that, we just took everything outside of that down to about 5. Okay. There's 10 times more being used there than there is anyplace else. So you can't just say, okay, you're going to hit me for 2,000 acre feet when it's all being caused by them.
That's just outside.
So you're saying that 2,000 acre feet, it's outside the reservation, would go into the Snake River aquifer?
Yes. I'm saying that all the consumptive use reduces flow to the Eastern Snake Plain aquifer.
That is what I asked. I asked, is that 2,000 acre feet going into the aquifer? You're saying, if I reduce my 2,000 acre feet, you're going to get it. That's not correct.
Okay.
You only get a percentage of that 2,000 acre feet.
Why would you get it all? Because it's staying in the aquifer. It's eventually going to make its way down there if people are pumping it out.
But that's a presumption that you have.
Okay.
They changed the law that I have to prove it's not going instead of you have to prove it is going. That's a little bit of a problem because that changes everything that's there. Two other questions. Let's just take, for example, a person out of Blackfoot. And he has a consumption, say he's using 200 acre feet someplace in a field. If he quits using it, or he changes from his flood irrigation that is 25% efficiency, he's benefiting the aquifer because most of that's going in the ground. Some of it's evaporating. Most of it's going to go in the ground. Okay? So then he's actually benefiting the people in Twin Falls, but you tell him he has to quit putting water on when he's actually benefiting them because they will cut him back. Reverse that. If he goes to sprinkler irrigation, he's not putting it in now. So suddenly that drops the Snake River plain, I mean the Snake River itself down. So Twin Falls calls a water call on him for not wasting water because it became more efficient. Number two of that scenario, you go downstream to Twin Falls and they're flooding or doing something else and they're 40% efficient. You're saying that the person, because they're 40% efficient, the person upstream that is 75 to 80% efficient because of the way he's farming gives a water call to add to this person's poor 40% efficiency. Is there anything in the law that takes that into effect whatsoever? Because I've never seen it.
The issue of efficiency has been litigated several times, most recently at the Idaho Supreme Court, and the efficiency of the surface water coalition canals, including Twin Falls, was found to be sufficient. So that question, that very question you're asking, has been litigated all the way through the court system.
But you still didn't answer the question that he's 40% efficient, so he can make a water call, which if he suddenly became 80% efficient, he wouldn't need a water call.
Well, the courts have answered that question for
him. Saying that you can be inefficient.
The courts have said that Twin Falls and the rest of the surface water coalition...
Well, say it straight here. You said that he has the right to be inefficient.
Their current efficiency has been found by the courts
to be inefficient.
Their current efficiency has been found to be sufficient.
So that's a problem that the Supreme Court has said, yes, you can go ahead and be inefficient.
If the way to change that is to change the law.
Correct.
As the law currently...
So someday that has to become part of this scenario, but it won't be in my lifetime.
And that would be a great thing to put on record during the testimony.
I'm putting that in the testimony right here.
Okay.
The second thing, how about if you put a well someplace and I pump 200 acre feet out? Depending on where it's at in this whole system, it may be a one-to-one because I'm right next to where it's running into the river. Okay, so there's some of those I agree. How about all the rest of them? Then you're making the claim that if I stop 200, you're going to eventually get 200. But that's really not the case. You don't know what percentage of my 200 acre feet that I got a water call on and had to shut down is ever going to make it someplace to benefit the other person. And in a broader scenario, how many years does it take to get there? 10, 20? I don't know if he shuts down his well, how long it's going to ever take before his finally gets there. Because we don't know where that spring comes out and where it comes up and whether it's just sitting half the time there and it's not even moving. So you make water calls against me for 200 acre feet. That's technically not fair because you can't say I gave them that 200 acre feet. Therefore, Twin Falls can make a water call, nothing happens. They make a bigger water call, nothing happens. Now you're trying to expand the Snake River Plain to take in every little corner around the edges that aren't one-to-one ratios. And so I want my testimony is adding everybody in as the same as somebody that's got a well right next to a spring that's running into the Snake River Plain is not fair. And you can comment on that if you want.
No, I think you're right. Depending on where you're located to important stretches of the Snake River, you will have varying degrees of impact. But I think we're in agreement, you are going to have some impact somehow. So that's...
There'll be something, yes.
Yeah.
And in our case, our impact goes directly to the water that's running in and being used on the reservation. There's not much of Banning Creek that doesn't get used on the reservation. And because my neighbor is also irrigating out of the creek that I run some of my water from, I changed my irrigation practices to make sure that he who has first in time on a reservation right has the water in August and September. I stopped irrigating, I only grow crops, I quit doing alfalfa because he needs the water then. So I do these mitigations and it's going to the reservation, and then Twin Falls will have a water call on me, possibly because of what you're doing here. But it has nothing to do with them. It is only going to go to the reservation. It does not have to do with them. So what right do I then have to stop that water call because they're saying I'm a one-to-one and it's not happening? I can prove it.
You're talking surface water now. Do you have groundwater rights?
Both. You're saying they're all together, so it doesn't matter. But the surface water is one-to-one.
Sure. Okay. That's a great comment for the record, yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Okay. Yes, sir.
I want your comment on the reduction of the water going in the aquifer since 1980. Has that reduction occurred from farm irrigation, or has it occurred from housing development?
What comment was that?
You said that the discharge reduction from 1980 has reduced.
That was me. I said that the discharge from the aquifer in the near Blackwood and the Noka Beach has been going down since then.
Right.
And it is irrigation. Municipalities.
But has the irrigation acres increased?
Oh, the irrigation acres increased since 1980.
Not since 92.
So we're looking at housing development or weather that has potentially reduced this, but yet the growers are going to be held accountable for it.
Non-irrigation uses from the aquifer for cities, houses, industry, are about 3% of the total use. So small, it's there. It's a real number, but irrigation is about 97% of the use. But to your point, cities within the area, common groundwater supply are part of the water call. They've had to develop a mitigation plan and do things. They've had to develop their own recharge program, you know, to compensate for their impacts. Industries, you know, some of the industries, Lamb Weston, Simplot, et cetera, they have a mitigation plan where they do certain actions to compensate for their impacts on the aquifer.
So what I look at is, and I've talked to some water users from Shelley area, Blackwood, the water calls, and it's not reducing or taking away the seniority rights of the water owners. But when they make a water call, everybody should have to take a cut, even the ones that make the call. If there's a shortage of water, then that you can't just shut these growers off. I mean, financially to the communities and the state, it's devastating.
And that's the purpose of developing a mitigation plan. Okay, and that's what these guys with IGWA have done for the groundwater districts and the groundwater pumpers on the plain. They've developed a mitigation plan that both them and the Surface Water Coalition, canals, Twin Falls, etc., have agreed to. And as long as they do the things that the plan says they're going to do, then they can continue pumping groundwater.
But in present law, like Hans was saying, if Flint Falls makes a water call, if they're included in this area, they can shut him off. And he's not subject to a reduced irrigation level. He's done.
If the department decides to include this valley in the area common groundwater supply, then the groundwater pumpers would have the option of probably joining one of the groundwater districts and getting coverage that way through the plan that already exists. And these guys would be the ones to talk to about how that would happen.
Anything else, Rich?
I think someone else
had. Yeah, there was a hand up maybe.
I saw something.
But you said if who decides to do it?
If the department were to decide to include this valley in the area on the grant list.
So is this already a foregone conclusion that we would be included? Or is it still a discussion?
That's the purpose of this meeting is there's a proposed action to include this tributary basin. We're holding the hearing to present the proposal, get feedback from the water users, and that will help inform the director when he makes his decision on what to do, yes or no. But that
so the fact that we're above the reservation and they use everything that comes down there anyway should be part of whether they decide to include this in Snake River Plan. Because we have our own deals with the reservation, as some of you know, right now with what's going on with the reservation. And we would probably have to give up something to solve that problem ourselves. And as soon as we give that up, then we'll get a water call. And we go, now wait a minute, we got to hit both sides. That's not fair.
I think all the unique aspects of the tributary basin will be taken into consideration as part of the record.
So,
our
geologists are right here. At what point in this valley does the water start flowing down towards the Snake River Aquifer, and where does it flow towards you?
So we have two reports that we're relying on right now, one from the USGS in the late 90s and one from the Kirby Valley in the early, let's say around 2010. We think that the divide is right at the top. The groundwater divide is right at the top as you go down, up and over the divide. I can't remember what river it is, but the stream goes up and then it turns west, right in that area. I can show you.
So how much of this valley is in?
It's about 15 miles above where we are right now. That is the divide. And then everything north.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, we'll get into the testimony portion. Grab those sign-in sheets. See who. Hans, you hit.
Okay. So is what I've done sufficient to the testimony?
Yes. You want to just introduce your name?
Okay.
Your full name?
My name is Hans Hayden, and I have both groundwater and surface water rights.
Perfect. Thank you. Anybody else want to provide testimony here for the record? Again, you can submit written testimony up through April 7th. But even if you wrote no on here, anyone would like to come up and provide testimony? Okay, well with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn this hearing. Thank you, everybody.
Well, I will just say one thing. Thank you for having the hearing, even though sometimes it can be confrontational because we want answers. Mm-hmm. But somebody's trying to do something. And it was like watching what went on last summer in the Snake River Plain. At the beginning, it was, okay, every city from American Falls to Driggs is going to go bankrupt if you shut off all the water. You know, there has to be another way to do it. And eventually, they hopefully have come up with a way to mitigate it. And I have good friends, including people like Adam Young, who spent a bunch of time with this. So, kind of followed along with it. So at least somebody is trying to find an answer rather than just kill Eastern Idaho. Because it's based on agriculture. And that's based on water.
few of us pray for rain and everybody else gets it out of the snow. So.
No.
And we have been sending a lot of it down the last week.
Well, thank you for your comments and all the insightful and good questions. So with that, we'll adjourn this hearing. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.